Let me first start off by saying I appreciate the opportunity to preach this lesson this evening, and I hope that I say something tonight that is not of my own words, but is totally of God's words, and if I say something that's not according to God's will, that you will come to me and you will talk to me about it, and I will make that correction in my life as far as what I've talked about. Tonight's study is a very difficult one for a lot of people, myself included. It's not an easy one because our area has been plagued by this tragedy. And you see tonight our study of our title says, "Does committing suicide mean you're going to hell?" And that's a quotation, and you'll see why in a couple minutes. And so it says, "A study of suicide and the Bible." And the first thing you have there is a pre-study question. It says, when you hear the word suicide, what is the first thing you think of and why? You can go ahead and, if you want to write that, you don't have to share it with anybody, of course. You write that down yourself or think about it yourself. When you first hear the word suicide, what is the first thing you think of and why? I'll answer it to the best of my ability. Most likely, most of you probably put down things like self-murder, sadness, depression, or maybe you put things down like the name of an acquaintance, a friend, or a family member who committed suicide or attempted to commit suicide. Possibly you even put down your own name and or the struggles you personally have dealt with when it comes to this issue. The truth of the matter is, no matter how you look at this issue, it is indeed a sad, sad state of affairs. One in which our society, our world, deals with on a day-to-day basis. Still, somehow, the topic of suicide has become one of those taboo topics, has it not, in our society and in our church? Not God, our church. It's never been taboo with God to talk about things like this, but for some reason our church it has. It has marked too horrible to discuss in public or private. People have thought that. But as it says in 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17, if you want to look it up, you can check it. I wrote it down there for you, but if you want to check it out, you're more than welcome to. It says, all Scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be adequate, equipped for every good work. That's what I'm hoping tonight we get out of this, is that we realize that this is a biblical thing. This is something in the Bible that's discussed in the Bible, and we need to combat that, and part of that combating is talking about that. With that said, I in no means intend to mock or poke fun of suicide or the thought of suicide tonight, because it is a very sad situation. Also, please know that with this lesson, I'm not trying to diagnose reasons why individuals commit suicide or have suicidal thoughts. I'm not smart enough, I think, to diagnose that. My goal tonight is the same goal I had when I was presented with this topic, which was recently in a class by one of my students, and they asked me, they said, "Mr. Marshall, does committing suicide mean you're going to hell?" And I had to look that up. I wanted to look it up and make sure to give them a biblical answer, as I'm going to try to give you tonight. I didn't want to just say, yes, you're going straight to hell. That would make no sense. I have no authority to say that, for one. And two, you need to have biblical answers for everything that you have. But study tonight, and before we go further, I guess I will say that if you are questioning if I've ever had any relations with this, which I think is a big deal, I was talking to Shireen about this today, and I think 11 people from my graduating high school class have died. 10 of them have been committed suicide. And Charlotte, her daughter, graduated with me, and we were talking about that today. 10 of them out of 11, one just murdered. So we got a really good reputation here. It's really going well. It's sad. It's very sad, and it's a situation that is plaguing our society. And if, like I said, if we don't talk about it, the devil uses it as a tool, and that is a sad thing. So as we examine the biblical examples, let us keep in mind two things. This study does not delve into mentally impaired suicide. This is not something I'm going to get into, because if you see on the right side, on your questions, quotes, notes, and thoughts section there, I've diagnosed it a little bit, or talked about a little bit of there, what the mental, people who have mentally impaired suicide, what happens with that. The Bible's not clear cut on that, and that's one of those things that are in those gray areas that I don't know. And I've done the best I can to research it and give you some information. If you'd like to look at that, you can look at that in your own time. That's a whole different study in itself. We're not going to get into that. But two, let us remember that what happens to those who rebel against God and God's word. That's important to remember in tonight's study. In Romans 13:2, and I didn't write down all the verses for you, just some of them. It says, consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. So we have to make sure that we understand that completely, that if you rebel against God's will, you're rebelling against Him, and you will bring judgment on yourself. With that in mind, in the Bible we see a couple examples of suicide, but too many people shock the word suicide, which is generally defined as the act or instance of intentionally killing oneself, is not specifically used in the Bible. You're not going to find the word suicide in the Bible. You'll find at the act of suicide, but you will not find the word suicide. However, the injunction against killing embodied in the Ten Commandments, i.e. thou shalt not kill, Exodus 20 and 13, dealing with the unlawful homicide of another human being would also forbid you killing yourself. But here are some examples. These are where it gets really interesting for me. And when I was studying it, I did not know all of these. I was pretty shocked by some of them, actually. The first one I did know about was Samson. If you want to look at Judges 16:29 through 30, we're going to be reading that in a second. Judges 16:29 through 30. You see here the conclusion of Samson's life, a judge sent by God. Samson was a very confusing person. He was a person that was, we'll get into a little bit later, that he did nothing that God said. God would say to do this, and he would go against basically everything God said. He was a kind of a goofy guy. That's the way it was. Towards the end of his life is what we pick up here, as this is the end of his life, in Judges 16, in verse 29, you see there, it says, Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested and braced himself against them, and the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those he'd killed in his life. And if you know anything about Samson's life, he killed a lot of people in his life. So that was, he took a lot of people with him. But what he did is he committed suicide. He bent the pillars and killed himself. And some people would say that's a sacrifice because he sacrificed himself for God. So the question is, was Samson saved at the end of his life here when he has had his hair cut, his eyes gouged out by the Philistines? He had fallen in love with Delilah, of course. That story is as old as time, of course. He fell in love with Delilah. She betrayed him. They cut his hair. They bound him. He lost his strength. And then that's when they're mocking him, and he prays to God to give him that strength to do that. So was Samson saved or not? The Bible does not tell us for sure. However, if we read Samson's life in the book of Judges, we notice something peculiar. He never listened to God, and he always did things his own way. Going back to that very first thing we said up there in Romans 13:2, you should not rebel against what God says. Samson would not have been in the situation he was in if he did not rebel against God time and time again. And that's important to note, too. The second example we see here of suicide in the Bible is Saul, King Saul. I'm not sure how many of you realize King Saul killed himself, committed suicide. King Saul, of course, was chosen by God to lead the people of Israel. The Israelites begged, pleaded with God. They wanted to be like everybody else. They wanted a king. And King Saul, of course, was selected. King Saul started out a very good man, and he completely gradually went downhill until the end of his life when he has completely lost favor with God. If you look at 1 Samuel 31 and 4, 1 Samuel 31 and 4, you see here the act that we're talking about. And we'll trace it back to why he did this in a second. But if you're looking at 1 Samuel 31 and 4, it says, then Saul said to his armor bearer, this is at the end of a battle, draw your sword and pierce me through with it. Otherwise, these uncircumcised will come and pierce me through and make sport of me. But his armor-bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. So Saul took his sword and fell on it. And that means he killed himself. He took his own sword. He was afraid that they would come and make a mockery of him. So he in turn killed himself. A very Roman idealism. If you know anything about the Romans, they would do this very often. I think Brutus, Julius Caesar and Brutus. Brutus was one who did that. And then his armor bearer, if you look in 5, you see another suicide. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So you see two suicides in a matter of 2 verses. Very strange thing. Let's see how Saul got to this point. Did he get there through God? Was it something that God had helped him get to? Or is it something that he is rebelling against God and it leads him to the spot where he thinks there's no turning back? It does not say there is no turning back. He thinks there is none. It seemed that Saul's life had been a rebellion with God's word, especially towards the end of his life. His act of suicide confirms this rebellion, as he couldn't hear from the Lord the day before he had consulted with a witch, another act of rebellion. Let's look at that. This is such an interesting story that's not talked about very often. 1 Samuel 28, 3 through 25. It's a lengthy reading, but it is an interesting read. And you see, we're in verse 31, which is later, that Saul committed suicide. All right? 1 Samuel 28, verses 3 through 25. It says, "Now Samuel was dead, and all of Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, his own city. And Saul had removed from the land those who were mediums and spiritists. So the Philistines gathered together and came and camped in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they camped in Gibeah. When Saul saw the camp of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. When Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophets." And that's a big thing for Saul, because every time Saul had asked before, God had given him answers. You see, God has removed himself from that. Why would he remove himself from Saul? Because Saul was not doing what was right. "Then Saul said to his servants, 'Seek for me a woman whom is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her.' And his servants said to him, 'Behold, there is a woman who is a medium in Endor.' Then Saul disguised himself and putting on other clothes and went, he and 2 men with him. And they came to the woman by night and said, 'Conjure up for me, please, and bring up for me whom I shall name to you.' But the woman said to him, 'Behold, you know that Saul has done, how he has cut off those who are mediums and spiritists in the land. Why are you laying a snare for my life to bring about my death?' Saul vowed to her by the Lord, saying, 'As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for the thing.' Then the woman said, 'Whom shall I bring up for you?' And he said, 'Bring up Samuel for me.' When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice, and the woman spoke to Saul, saying, 'Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul.' The king said to her, 'Do not be afraid, but what do you see?' And the woman said to Saul, 'I see a divine being coming out of the earth.' He said to her, 'What is this form?' And she said, 'An old man is coming up, and he is wrapped with a robe.' And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and did homage. Then Samuel said to Saul, 'Why have you disturbed me in bringing me up?' And Saul answered, 'I am greatly distressed, for the Philistines are waging war against me, and God has departed from me and no longer answers me, either through prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have to call upon you, that you may make known to me what I should do.' Samuel said, 'Why then do you ask me, since the Lord has departed from you and has become your adversary?'" Note that word. Adversary. "The Lord has done accordingly as he spoke through me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, to David. As you did not obey the Lord and did not execute his fierce wrath on Amalek, so the Lord has done his thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also give over Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines. Therefore tomorrow you and your sons will be with me," meaning that he will die. "Indeed, the Lord will give you to the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines." Then Saul immediately fell full upon the ground and was very afraid because of the words of Samuel. Also, there is no strength in him, for he had not eaten food all days and night. So it makes you wonder, makes you think about these crazy story. You know, you don't think these things aren't true, but he calls Samuel from the dead. He does things that are against God. He's done all these crazy things. Samuel comes to him and he says, "Why are you even disturbing me? I've told you before I died, before I was gone, that God was going to rip the kingdom out of your hand because you are his adversary." This is not the first time Saul had done these kind of things. Saul had a long history of doing that. And so God rejected him as king, and his suicide was not in accordance to God's words or his wishes. You see, the third example we have tonight is a character you don't hear about very often. Zimri in 1 Kings 16:18. If you look there, 1 Kings 16:18. You see Zimri, who's also a king. He was desperate as well, and you see the enemy took his city. You see in verse 18 it says, "When Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went to the citadel of the king's house and burned the king's house over him with fire and died." He burned himself alive with fire in the citadel. And the enemy, he was in desperate state. So is Zimri saved or not when he burned himself alive? Again, the Bible does not tell us for sure, but it does tell you in the very next verse, in verse 19, that says, "Because of his sins, which he sinned, doing evil and in the sight of the Lord, walking in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin, which he did, making Israel sin." There's a lot of sin in that verse. God is not looking at suicide and looking at it as a good occasion. You see, time and time again, as we go through this, that the people that get to the suicidal state have been led there on a long road of sin. This is not something that happens overnight. Unless it's a mental impairment thing, it does not happen overnight. It's time and time and time again not doing God's will that leads you to this horrific state. And as I said, some of my friends and some of the people that I've associated with and people that I care about that have committed suicide, I often think about how they could have done that in the step-by-step-by-step process when there is always another option. Even when a friend of mine blew his brains out because he's addicted to drugs, he owed people money and he never thought he could get out of that. There's always a way out. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. During Zimri's whole life, he was in rebellion with God. He committed atrocious iniquities. He had plenty of occasions to repent, and he never did. His suicide confirms his rebellion with God. And the last one we have, the last example we have tonight of suicide in the Bible is the most famous one, is Judas Iscariot. Possibly the most famous suicide in the Bible. You see in Matthew 27:5, "And he threw the pieces of silver into the temple sanctuary and departed, and he went away and hanged himself." It's talking about Judas. Of course, he betrayed Jesus, and when he had seen what he had done, he was money hungry. When he had seen what he had done, instead of changing his ways, repenting, trying to do the best he could, he didn't see a way out because he was so engrossed in sin that he killed himself. Was Judas saved or not? He'd been with Jesus. He was an apostle of Jesus. He had touched Jesus, physically touched Jesus. I guarantee he had. Spent 3 years with him. I'm sure he had to spend some time with him. Had conversations with him. Was his friend. He had to know Jesus' stance on this. And God's stance on this. And yet he still continues to kill himself. So was he saved or not? Once again, the Bible does not directly tell us for sure. However, it tells us in Acts 1:18, "With the reward he got from his wickedness," wickedness is not a positive word, "Judas bought a field. There he fell headlong, his body burst open, and all his intestines spilled out." Note his wickedness in that passage. It did not say that Judas was a good man. It did not say that Judas was any kind of a godly person or a godly example in any of the things that he left this world in. Also, you see in John 18:5, We see Judas referred to as a traitor, which he's referred to many times in the Bible. Again, we see here that Judas had led a life of rebellion, although he was a disciple of Jesus. It was a quiet rebellion, and his suicide confirms that. Now, let's look at a couple people you would not have expected that kind of contemplated suicide or wanted to die at points in their life and asked God even to kill them. They wanted out of this earth, but watch for God's reaction. And look at these people and what God gives them a way out, and they take that way out. What happens? The first one we have, there's Paul's jailer. If you look in Acts 16:27 through 28, this is when the great earthquake came and all the jail cells were open, and the jailer awoke. It says in 27, and he saw the prisoners' doors open, and he drew his sword and was about to kill himself. He thought that everybody had escaped. He thought his job was on the line. He thought that his livelihood was on the line. He thought they were going to kill him, so he's going to get to the act before anybody else did, supposing that the prisoners had escaped. But verse 28, but Paul cried out with a loud voice, saying, do not harm yourself, we are all here. And he doesn't harm himself. And he talks to Paul. And watch what the reaction is here. After the jailer stopped Paul, the gospel message was shared with him. And the result? You see in Acts 16:33, he and all his family were baptized. Sometimes it takes one person. You know, there's always that story, and I don't know if it's true or not. I'm sure at some point it was true, but the names and everything else is long since forgotten. And it's just one of those stories about a kid who had always been picked on in school and all that stuff. And he was standing at his locker, and he dropped some books. And another kid comes and helps him picks it up and says some nice words to him. And he goes home that night, and he thought about killing himself, and he didn't. And he always came back to that kid and said, you know, the reason I didn't kill myself is because of you. And you hear stories like that all the time. As a high school teacher myself, a girl just made a big speech. They had an anti-bullying rally, and it made me feel good as a teacher because you always try to inflict positive change. But the one thing she said was that she had thought about committing suicide many times, and she talked about a complete suicide. She said, you don't just commit suicide. It doesn't sound right. You're a complete suicide. You really want to kill yourself. And she's in a bad state. And she didn't take her life. And she said it was because of a boy at school named Jackson, who's a very good kid who's trying really hard. And then she said a crazy English teacher. So she pointed me out. But it's one of those things where it happens a lot, folks. You never know when a kind word or a kind deed. And we were talking about the Bible study on Friday. You ever think about a telemarketer? I think about this lately a lot. You have a telemarketer, you call on the phone, you never see their face, you never see who they are, you don't care, and you know, all you do is you want to get your TV on, your cable back on, your phone back on, and you're angry about it, so you just take it out on that person. Well, you have no clue if that person could go home that night and they could go home and kill themselves due to what you said and yelled at them so bad, or you said something to them so mean, even if you didn't cuss at them or swear at them, words can hurt. And they go home, and that's it for them. You never know about it, you never hear about it, and you never know you did it or helped with it. But it also goes the other way, too. What happens if you call up a telemarketer and you're the kindest person in the world to them? You never see this person, you never see their face, you never know what they look like, but they know you're a Christian at some point, or you just talk to them about being a Christian at some point, and you're a kind person. You treated them differently than everybody else, which the Bible talks about. And they go back maybe a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, 10 years later, 15, and they're baptized and they become a Christian because of a phone conversation with you. You don't think a conversation with people is powerful. I know it firsthand. Anybody you talk to at any time, you need to be fully engrossed in that conversation because it could change your life. It could change your life. And that's what you got to realize. The song we sing, we are the only Bible that some people will ever read, you got to realize that is very true. And everybody you come in contact with is a soul. And do you treat people that way? And it's not just about suicide. It's not about just that. It's about saving people's souls. And we need to really start looking at other people and saying, just like Paul looked at the jailer and said, don't do this. His whole family was baptized because of that. His whole family was saved. And who knows how many generations of people after that. And the guy who's about to kill himself. The second example of someone who wanted to die was Moses. It's hard to believe Moses would ever think about that, right? Startingly, we see Moses' desire to die in Numbers 11, 14 through 15. Numbers 11, 14 through 15. It says there, I alone am, this is Moses talking, I alone am not able to carry all this people, because it is too burdensome for me. So if you are going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once, if I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. Moses wanted to die. He asked God, please kill me. If I found favor in your eyes, if you love me, kill me. I don't want to deal with these people anymore. I think there's always a time in life when you just get sick and tired. I mean, I think about high school kids, and just it's not even just that. I mean, like I said, that bullying seminar thing was very sad, because you heard about all the teachers that bullied students. There's teachers that bully teachers. There's people at your work, I guarantee, that bully you. That's just the way they are. Or pick on you, or anything like that. And sometimes you will go home, and these people have said some mean things to you, or customers, or anything, and you go home, and it hurts. You're tired, mentally exhausted. And if you're living in sin, if you're time and time again, it's a lot easier to think terrible thoughts. But Moses was a pretty godly man. And Eve wanted to do this. Get rid of me. I'm ready to be done with this. They were hard people to please, were they not, the Israelites? They always complained constantly. And finally, his patience wore out, and he begged God for his death. Did God honor his wish? That's the thing. Did God honor his wish? No. He didn't take his life away. He did better than that. He gave him a solution to his problem. And Moses had set up a pattern that where he was a godly person, when God gave him an opening, said, here's your solution, he listened to God. If you look at Numbers 11, 16 through 17, just turn it just over a couple verses there, 11, 16 through 17. The Lord therefore said to Moses, gather for me 70 men from the elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people and their officers, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their stand there with you. Then I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take the Spirit who is upon you, and I will put him upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you will not bear it alone. He says, go down and take 70 people. You don't have to do this all alone. And that's what you think when you get into a suicidal state. The people I've talked to that have been there said, I felt like I was the only person who cared about me. I felt like I was the only person in the world. That's sad. There's been Christians that killed themselves. How do we get to that point, folks, where we are here Sunday, Wednesday, when we meet outside of this, and we still feel so alone? How are we not a family enough to realize that that's a bad spot? That's a twofold battle, though. One, you have to let yourself get there. Even though you come to church on Sunday and Wednesday and stuff like that, it does not happen overnight, like I said. It doesn't happen. You just wake up one day and want to kill yourself. It's a pattern of sin that has led you down, down, down into a deep depression or something else. And that's where it gets to. I've said the story from here one time before, but I'll say it again because it's very applicable. You know, sometimes people look at me and think I have no low point. I think it's a ridiculous statement. We're all depressed at some point. And believe you me, we all get down. I mask it better than other people, probably. But even when I lived in Maryland, it was a tough time because I was by myself for most of the time. And there's a guy, I remember coming up the stairs at that school where I was teaching at late at night, and Mr. Beachy was there. He was a janitor. And he had thought Mr. Beachy had been in a hospital and he thought he saw angels. Whether he did or not, I don't know. That's not here or there. But he told me that one day, and then he was coming upstairs and he asked me, he said, and this is kind of racist, so bear with me, but this is exactly what he said. He said, I said, hey, Mr. Beach, how are you? And it was dark in the hallway. I was walking to my room, and he said, hey, Nathan, do you have an uncle or something who's a little Jewy? He's a little wacky. And I looked at him. I said, no, Mr. Beach, I don't. Oh, I don't know what that's about, but I said, okay, yeah, you have a good night, man. And he goes, well, I just wanted to let you know that because there's an angel standing right behind you right now, and he looks like that. And I just wanted to let you know, the next time you feel like you're really alone, you're not. And I took that as we should all think that about God. The The next time you think you're alone and you're so far down and there's nothing that could be done, you realize that God is with you at all times. And just like Moses, when he reached the lowest low points and he wanted to be gone from this world, God said, I'm not through with you yet. I want you to do this for me. And he gave him an option. And Moses did that and did a lot more good things. You also see Elijah in 1 Kings 19, 2 through 4 there. If you look there, 1 Kings 19, 2 through 4. And boy, did Elijah have to deal with a lot with Jezebel. I mean, nobody calls her daughter Jezebel. That'll tell you right there why, how bad of a woman she was. In today's society, I mean, you don't even hear a Jezebel. She's a bad woman. It says, then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. She's going to kill him. And he was afraid and arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servants there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough. Now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's. Again, a great, great man pleading with God, please kill me. Get this over with. We think these people, we talked about that this morning in class, these people in the Bible as just these words on a piece of paper, these characters in a book, they're real, folks. And she was evil as evil comes. And she had picked and she had beat up and bullied Elijah so much that he, who's a man of God, a prophet of God, said, it's enough, it's enough. Kill me here. And we think in this world that we're the only ones that have ever had troubles. Open your mind, folks. That's the definition of closed-minded. When you look around, you say, it's only me that's ever had to deal with this. No offense to patients, but that's a 13-year-old girl mentality. When she came in the other day, she was crying around and said, you have no clue what I've been through. And we all see teenagers do that. We laugh at it because we've been there and we've done that. But they don't see us as their age. They don't know us as their age. And just like these characters in the Bible, we don't look back at these characters in the Bible and think they're real. And that is the devil working inside our brain. When you refuse to believe that these were real people who went through real things, the same things that you're going through, and that the answers are in the Bible, and that every answer you're ever looking for is in the Bible, that's when you realize this world is not depressing. This world is an opportunity. And that every single person you meet, you have a privilege to invite them to church. You have a privilege to sit alongside them, to worship with them for whatever amount of time we are on this earth. And when that day is done, I have enjoyed my life because I have brought people to God. And I will see them again in heaven. That's what this world is about. And that is how you avoid suicidal thoughts, my friends. And the last person you have there, oh, let's look at, did God fulfill Elijah's wish? No, he did better than that. And you see in 1 Kings 19, 5 through 9, it says, he lay down and slept under the juniper tree which he'd been. And behold, there was an angel touching him. And he said, arise, eat. And they looked, and behold, there was at his head bread cake baked on hot stones in a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came a second time and touched him and said, arise, eat, because your journey is too great for you. So he rose and ate and drank and went in the strength of the food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. And then he came to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And you see there that God made sure to feed him, led him on a 40-day journey where he was able to face God and have communion with him. He was able, through God's help, to do many other great deeds in the name of the Lord, and led to even train his successor, Elisha, who was an awesome, awesome, godly man too. Had he committed suicide, had he died at that moment, he would have missed on all these golden opportunities. And you've got to realize that same thing about your own lives and of people's lives around you. It starts with us, folks. If we never get to that point, then your kids will never get to that point. The people around you will never get to that point. You can't control everything, but you can control your attitude. And you can realize that with every downward spiral our life takes, there will be many, many more golden opportunities. And I'm not an old, old man yet. I know that. But I often think about what I'll be like when I'm older. And I think about, will I be able to continue to preach God's Word? Will I continue to inspire people, hopefully, to come to church with me? And I hope I can with all my might, because it doesn't matter if my legs don't work, if my arms don't work, and my mouth doesn't work, my hearing doesn't work. There's still some way I can communicate with people. And as long as I have a breath in my body, I better be trying to get people into this building or some other church. You know, someone told me one time, a person was coming to church. I said, well, they live around here? I said, no, they don't live around here. Oh, that's a shame. They could have worshipped here. It's not a shame. They can worship anywhere and they're still a Christian. And we got to realize that. Even if they don't worship here, we still have an obligation to try to help anybody we can. Let's look at our last example. Paul. Paul is one of the best examples in the entire Bible of a man who just continually struggled with his Christianity, but continued to do wonderful things. Paul is a man who had been revered by so many for his Christianity. Still, even at the height of his Christian state, he wanted so bad to die and to go to heaven. We see his words and true desires for this in Philippians 1, 21 through 26. Philippians 1, 21 through 26, he says, for to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. To die is gain. But if I am to live on in this flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose. But I am hard pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and to be with Christ. For that is very much better. Yet to remain on in this flesh is more necessary for your sake. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in this faith, so that your proud confidence in me may abound in Christ Jesus through my coming to you again. And the older I get, the more I feel like Paul. I tell people quite often anymore, if I die in a car wreck or something else, I've lived a good life. Don't cry at my funeral. It's not really that big a deal. I know I'm going to heaven. I know it. Because I'm working very hard at it. We all need to be like that. I've asked many Christians about heaven as I was growing up or whatnot. It's staggering how many people say, I hope I'm going to heaven. Live your life like you know you're going to heaven, because there's no way that you couldn't, because you are living it so. That was what Paul said. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to die, because to die is to gain, because I see heaven. I can feel God, because when I read my Bible, I feel His presence. When I realize this world is bigger than myself, I feel His presence. When I talk to other people and I talk to them about God, so much passion overcomes me that I feel His presence everywhere I go. I know that God is real. But did Paul take his own life? He could have done that. He could have killed himself right there on the spot. Would he have went to heaven? No. Paul knew that God had bigger plans for himself than his own desires and his death. Paul was aware that God will judge when his time was done, not Paul. Psalms 139 and 16 says, your eyes saw my unformed body, all the days ordained were for me as written in your books before one of them came to be. If Paul knew this, why can't we? God chooses when we die, not us. God has plenty of things for us to do. And when you're tired and you're wore out, and you feel like you just can't do anything. This world has got me down and I cannot possibly do something for God at this moment. Realize that when we don't do stuff for God, we're going the other way. We're going the way that so many of our friends, our families, our acquaintance have made. You know, step by step down a terrible, terrible path that led to them. And this is graphic, and I'm sorry if it hurts anybody's feelings, but it's the truth. To put their gun in their mouth, to feel that steel on their lips, to pull that trigger. It takes a very, very messed up person, someone who is blinded by sin, blinded by the devil. We cannot go down that path, my friends. We've got to fight against that. We've got to be better. We've got to work together. We've got to talk to each other. And we've got to love each other like there is no tomorrow. Because we don't know. In conclusion, our God does not desire our suicide. Our God is a God of hope. He is all-powerful. Jesus has promised us in Matthew 28:20, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Jesus is with us. Why not hand over your burdens to Him instead of carrying them all by ourselves? No wonder we're so tired. It's not our task to carry these burdens by ourselves. Just as it wasn't for Moses, Elijah, Paul, Paul's jailer, Judas, Saul, all of them. Here's what Jesus promises us if we hand over our burdens to Him. Matthew 11:28. "Come to Me, all you are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." That's when you rest. God will give you rest. Nowhere does this promise ask us or want us to commit suicide. He promised us to take care of our burdens and give us rest. And if Jesus or God makes a promise, you can bet that it will be fulfilled. Don't you worry about that. And when you get down in life, remember these things. And remember these people that are also down. And maybe you have been here tonight and you have been like my one student and asked, "Does committing suicide mean you're going to hell?" I can't pass judgment on anybody, but I think it's pretty obvious from the Scripture. And like I said many times in this lesson, we cannot go down that path. And if you've started down that path, you want to change your ways. Tonight is no better time than tonight. It just takes one step. That song is so beautiful. Only one step. One action, one moment can change so many people's lives. Not just yours. You know, I was talking to my father the other day, and it's something that I've stumbled upon over the last 2 years. Not that it's a new philosophy, but it's something that he was thinking about evidently too. And he came up and talked to me. He said, "You know, it's amazing how many millions and billions and trillions of things have had to happen in this world, and how many thousands upon millions and billions of people have had to happen for me to stand before you and have this talk with you tonight, and for you to sit there and to listen patiently to me." And that's a testament to God in itself. And the next time you feel insignificant, realize that whatever you do, there is, for every action, there's a reaction. And all the things you do, there will be some kind of a good thing or a bad thing come from them. And the more we put our faith in God, the more good things will come. If you have not been baptized tonight, that's one of those things you can do. That's a good thing. That's a great thing. That's a moment to change not only your life, but your kids' lives, your grandkids' lives, your whole family's life. On my grandmother and my grandfather on my mother's side, there are two totally different religions. And the story goes, whether it's true or not, I wasn't there, but I know that most of it's true. They were both two totally different religions. They said, "The Bible says there's only going to be one religion. Let's figure out which one it is." They started visiting different churches. And that's how the Sam side of our family became members of the Church of Christ. And that's how Dorothy Sams, who many of you know, and I still think about very often, is still alive and well in this building tonight because of the things she did And Paul Sands, who I never met, is still alive and well. It takes one action. Without that action, my father would not be here tonight. I would not be here tonight. Patience would not be here tonight. Ken would not be here tonight. Dan would not be here tonight. Jared would not be here tonight. Jess, Lindsay, Wendy, Debbie. The list goes on and on of people that one action has changed. Make that step tonight as we stand and sing.